I'm Wendell. I'm living loved. Oh, see the merch? Broadway. These are available. Go to the website and they can tell you how to get it. I can't remember the details, but you can get hats and vests and shirts. And I don't think they have hoodies, but they got all kind of stuff. So I'm proud of my little hat. So I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by Jesus. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to work and control. And Robbie and I had a marathon conversation last night about our food issues. And I can't, it's not fair for me to involve her, but talking about my own food issues, I got a problem. I know I got a problem. And so we're going to take baby steps together, see what we can do. So I'm really struggling with that. Food is my drug of choice. And during the pandemic, I've been an addict. So anyway, and I'm not done yet. And I've had issues with porn and alcohol and rage and panic attacks and depression. Now I'm done. Hey. So we're on the third session on this story about the good father and his two sons. It's always been called the prodigal son. I'm never going to refer to it that way again because that's not what the story's about. It's not about the son. It's about the father, and it's about his love for his two boys. Very radically different sons. And so I think I told you the first time out that this is the basis of the next workbook that we're going to use in Pathway, and it's also going to be available to small groups in the big church as well. Our small groups are going to dovetail with theirs from now on. So whenever they have a new set of sessions, we'll be involved in that. So we're in a whole new era for Pathway and recovery in this church, brand new era. This church is embracing more than it ever has recovery as a model for ministry and a model for living out our faith. And so the small groups we're having now, Matt mentioned them. I'm looking around and seeing several who are involved in these small groups, and actually several who facilitate the small groups. And the words that I'm getting, the feedback I'm getting from these groups, it's unbelievable what's happening in our church. And God is just infiltrating with recovery. And you know what that is. It's just truth. We're just starting to tell our truth. And we're being real, and we're being loved, and it's changing the church. So anyway, this story is the basis of the next workbook, and it's going to be six. I started out 8 sessions. It's pared down to 6 sessions. And really what it is it's like Jesus redefining and inviting us into how we might want to do church together differently than we've been doing it. And if you remember, it started with the Father. It has to start with it. We're only as good as our God. So it starts with the Father. And then last week we explored more about the, is he a father or is he a boss? Because it's a family business. So we were talking about that, and we decided that the family business is way more about celebrating each other than it is about making money and making production, being productive. And the church, I think this church is really buying into that, is celebrating community, celebrating each other, and not, oh, you got to be hard at work. Tonight I'd like to take a closer look. Tonight's going to be a little more negative, a little darker, a little more indicting. And guess why? Because we're going to talk about the older brother. He was kind of a dark figure in this story. I think a lot of us identify with the younger brother. Yeah, we've sown our wild oats and we've come home and we've kind of come to our senses. We identify with the father because we all want a father who loves us like this. So it's like, wow, this is too good to be true. We look at the older brother, and some of us identify with him as well. I do. But he is not a bright spot in this story. When you get to the end of the story, younger brother is home and partying with dad. Older brother is outside refusing to come in. And there is no reconciliation for that part. The story ends. And you have to think, well, what happened to big brother? You know, little brother comes home. Big brother's still out, not wanting to come into the house. So you have to kind of wonder what happened with him. So it's kind of a It's the dark aspect of the story, so we have to talk about that. So that's what we're going to talk about that tonight. Let's take a closer look at the big brother. And if you want a title for this session tonight, it would be Church as a Contest. Just think about that, Church as a Contest. So you think about, boy, I don't want to name any names. There's only two people in the room, maybe three or four, who would really get this. But I was born a second child in a family. I'm not even going to look over here because she knows exactly what I'm going to say. I was born a second child in a family, and my greatest crime to the firstborn that it was that I was born. That was my crime. How could you dare show up on the scene where I was the center of attention? I didn't have to share my attention. I didn't have to share food. I didn't have to share Cheerios, teddy bears, nothing, TV time with anybody. It's all about me, and you showed up. And I've kind of lived with that dynamic for the rest of my life. My crime was that I was born. And in this story, Big Brother had it made until Little Brother showed up. And we already know their personality types, right? Big Brother is the dutiful. And this is often the case with the oldest child. If you're an older child, you're like, yeah, I'm kind of like that. But in this case, the oldest child was the responsible one. They were the one that you know, if it's going to get done, I'm going to have to do it. It's interesting. We were born to parents who were both oldest children. So responsibility was huge in our home. You know, dad, mom, both oldest children. So Big Brother's here. Little Brother shows up, cute as a button, precocious, smile on a whim, you know. Just a darling little thing. And Big Brother's like, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? And so he figured out quick, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun Little Brother. You get the analogy? All I got to do is outrun Little Brother. The bear's going to get him because he's clumsy, he's dirty, he's messy. I'm potty trained. He's still pooping his diapers, you know. I don't get mom and dad up every night all night. I sleep through the night. I pick up my own toys. He doesn't. So all I got to do is outrun Little Brother. I don't have to outrun the bear. So life instantly turned into a contest. I've been around longer. I kind of know what dad likes. And so I'll make sure that I do what I already know dad likes. And whenever I get it right, I will raise my hand. And whenever he gets it wrong, I will point my finger. Look at me, look at him, you know. And so life becomes this contest. And Little Brother is breaking things and spilling things and being his cute little self. And the problem with Big Brother is he still gets all the hugs that Big Brother gets. I'm working my butt off. He's spilling and breaking things, and we both get hugs. And I don't get that. It just doesn't seem fair to me that we have to share this together. And so when he looks at his little brother, he says, okay, if he gets hugs, I will make myself huggier. I've made that word up and I like it. I will make myself huggier. If he gets the same allowance that I get, the same weekly allowance I get, I will work for mine. He sits on his little cute ass and doesn't do anything in his diapers. He sits around and is just cute. And he gets the same allowance as me, I'll go out and I'll earn my allowance. He is so imperfect, I will be perfect. So you see what it just sets up, this game between two brothers of life is a competition. Little Brother the whole time doesn't even know there's a bear. He doesn't even care that there's a bear. He's just waltzing through life, you know, and he's the precocious kid that walks up to dad and says, I want my piece of the pie. So he doesn't even know there's a contest. He's just bebopping through life, and the whole time the brother has got a notepad and is keeping score, and the brother is eagle-eyeing him the whole time. The little brother is happy. The big brother is miserable because life is a competition for him, and it's just an emotional SHIT storm. It's just a terrible. Big brother develops this gets this overly developed sense of suspicion. He's burned up with envy and jealousy. In him, it develops this low self-esteem. Well, what am I? You know, I'm working my butt off. What am I? He's not doing anything. And I'm working my butt off here. And you're not even looking my way. So it develops low self-esteem. And boy, when we say S-H-I-T, storm, you get it at the end of the story because he absolutely blows up on his dad. Now stop and think about this. I didn't have a perfect dad. And the longer I'm reconciled with my dad, the more I realize he was a very good man, a very good man. He was just clumsy as my dad. But I can't imagine getting in my dad's face and yelling at him like this guy did. And my dad wasn't perfect. And this dad is absolutely the dad we all want to be. And so he goes out and he says, we're having a party in here. Your brother's returned. Don't you want to come? And that pulled the pin on the grenade. It just pulled the pin on the grenade. And he just exploded all over his dad. This perfect, kind, gracious dad. He exploded on him. And he accused his brother of things that he knew nothing of. He says, he's been out whoring. There is no evidence in the story you ever visited a prostitute. But big brother says, you've been out doing that. And he said, I have worked for you like a slave. You have been my slave driver for years. The father was as far from being a slave driver as you could possibly get. But the young brother, or the older brother, in his mind had him pegged as this slave driver. So he yells at him as, you're this terrible, awful slave driver. And the dad's trying to compel him to come in. And he stomps off, boycotting return of his, it's his flesh and blood. It's his own flesh and blood. Boycotts the party. I won't go. And so when, forget church, just look at my own soul. When life becomes a contest, I wind up demonizing the people who love me the most. I wind up nitpicking and crucifying the people who literally have given me life and loved me and helped me. And that's what he's doing here. Now, a lot of us have issues with our parents and we need to dig through them. They've been far less perfect than this father here, and we need to dig into those. But this idea of just demonizing, you're a bad dad, he is a terrible brother, and I'm the only one worth anything in this family. You've got that rage, you've got that ego, you've got, you know, that hardness in him. He's a dark character. And the thing is he's worked for a long time to get this way. He didn't just wake up one day and was this way. He worked for a long time to get the way he is when he blows up at his dad. And I think about the times in my past when I've demonized the people who have loved me the most. I mean, in our groups, we have to get real about our upbringing. That's different. That's different. But to hate on people who have loved us and tried their best to take care of us, wow. Wow. So I can kind of identify some with this older brother. So what would this look like in the church? I mean, if you're not in agreement with me, I'm fine with that. But to me, I can't see it any other way. If God is the dad in this story, and the sons are us in this story, and they're running a family business together, it just about has to be the church. I can't see it any other way. It may be some other way, but it's the only thing that computes in my mind. So I think this story speaks to church and speaks to the way we do church. So when you have a family, the God's perfect in this family, but when you have a family where you have siblings that are living life as a contest, what does that do in a church setting? Well, that makes me, and I hear this a lot, even in our recovery rooms, where we're, especially with newbies, when we're talking about our real stuff, and you know, I want to get closer to God, and instantly they say, I know I need to pray more, I know I need to read more, I need to go to church more, I need to stay longer. You know, I need to. It's just the only way you can see it. If this thing with God is going to work, I'm the one that's going to have to make it work. It's going to be hard to get. If you have this view of your God, like this son did of his father, you have this idea, God is reluctant to look my direction. God's preoccupied with more important people than me. So I've got to work really, really double time to get him to even look at me, much less approve of me. And so when you've got a church full of people and they're all doing this, it's dog eat dog. It makes a contest. So when you walk into the room, I've lived here. I'm not making this, almost said a dirty word. How can I cuss in the cup and I don't feel like I'm supposed to cuss here? I don't understand that. Anyway, can I go for it? Okay, yeah. Thank you. I don't even know where I was. Oh, so I've lived this stuff. You walk into a room full of people, and you instantly start thinking, I know I'm not perfect, but I'm not as bad as they are. And I know that there's a lot of things I don't know, but I know more than him and her and him and her. And I know that I'm not squeaky clean, but I've been going here for a long, long time, and they've only been here for like a week or two. It's like the older brother with a notepad. We keep score of everybody else. So where do I stack up in the pecking order here at this church? Where am I in the pecking order? And I may not be at the top, but I'm closer to the top than you all are. I'm up here. This is good, healthy church. This is a good, healthy way to follow Jesus. This is a good, healthy way to attract people out there into what we're doing, who we are. But that's what this family was, at least to the older brother, not to the younger one. I want to be the most righteous person in the room. I'm sorry, but I just do. And y'all just keep working at it. You'll get your halos one of these days, but I've got to be the most righteous person in this room right now to feel good about myself. And because I know that when God walks through the door, when Jesus comes and sits down, he'll look at me first. And he'll be the most impressed with me. Okay, we've all grown up in church or been in churches. How frequent do you see this? I mean, it is everywhere. Church is just a contest. And so we have committees that can't agree on anything. Why? Because you come into the room automatically thinking this is a contest. Who's going to be right? You got a decision how to raise money. It's going to be a contest because I'm going to be the right one. I'm going to be the one that comes up with a good idea. You sit down and have a political discussion, a theological discussion, a relational, an emotional discussion. It doesn't matter what it is. I'm going to be right because I'm going to get up here so that when Dad walks through the door, I'm the first one he sees. This is messed up. I know I'm preaching a little bit, but this is just messed up to think that in this story, the good father says, yeah, I'm good. I'm good with a son competing for the love I already have for him. He doesn't have to compete for it. He doesn't have to lift a finger for it. I adore him. He told the guy, he said, everything I own is yours. You didn't know that? It's all yours. And yet this guy's competing for it. So, all right, I'm getting to the end here. Do you remember when Jesus used to talk about, I think he said it several times, he talked about the blind leading the blind. And this came to me as I was thinking about how to wind up this session. When we are so preoccupied with where we stand up with the Father, that's all we think about. And it's got two prongs to it. One is I want God to love me, but the second prong is I want him to love me more than he loves you. Where'd that come from? But it's there. I want him to love me more than he loves you. When we're so preoccupied and blinded with our own behavior or lack of misbehavior and all our correct beliefs and all our squeaky clean lifestyles and you know, my life is, I'm keeping it as perfect and good as I can. When we're so preoccupied with that, that's all we think about. What are you going to do today? I'm going to be the best person I can possibly be. Squeaky clean, as sinless as I can possibly be. When that's our preoccupation, we completely miss the love of the Father. We just miss it because we've spent all day working for something that was already ours. We just miss it. And the second thing we miss is the return of our wandering sibling. This is your brother. This is your sibling. And they were out half dead and they came home and you've completely missed out on it because you're so preoccupied with trying to maintain this righteous superiority. So, like I say, this is dark, and I don't really apologize. It's part of the story. I don't want to be that guy. I wasted good years of my life being that guy. I don't want to ever go back to that. I just want to let God love me. And you know what? Between now and my last breath, I'm going to screw up a bunch. That's just a promise. I didn't give it on the Bible. I'm going to screw up a bunch. And I think that's going to be okay. Because I have a father who just says, I know you've been out in the pig pen. I know you wasted all that money I gave you. I don't really care. You want a hug? Come here. Get a hug. And you get close enough and he grabs you and he won't let you go. He's giving you your hand, boy. And you stick it out and he puts a ring on it. And he pulls you in closer and he puts a robe around you. And he says, get in the house. We're going to celebrate. That's our dad. And we can either live celebrating him or we can live keeping score with our brothers and sisters. You want to do a product comparison, it's like a duh. You know, duh. What would we pick? So anyway, we're not into bondage here. So we're not into this at all. But Matt is going to come and help us figure out how we can safely figure out how to do these ropes. And I don't know what he's going to say about it, but when you